Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. It is July 27th, 2021, corresponding to the 18th of Av, 5781. Very, very hot in Israel these days and unusually humid. We normally don't have that. I mean, I live in the Judean Hills and humidity is so rare. Yesterday, which I'll talk about in a couple minutes, was like super humid. I was actually even thinking of asking Josh Haston if his head was frizzing. It was really that bad. Just kidding, Joshy. Anyhow, I hope you guys are okay. A little worrying here with the rise again of COVID, back to wearing masks in closed places. I'm kind of trying to ignore the fact that, God, I hope we don't go into some other lockdown. That would really be awful. Difficult for the decision makers to figure out what to do. A lot of businesses just reopened. Forget being a tour guide. That's not happening for a long, long time, it looks like. But just some of the restaurants and what's going to be with the schools. So there's really a lot of big decisions to make in the next few weeks. And I certainly don't envy the people that have to make them. I had an interesting, the last week, I would say, a lot of like, yes, thoughts going through my mind. I know you're all like totally shocked. Been studying really hard to try and finish my MA within the next couple of months. And so my brain is totally popping. Okay, if you want to know about Ashmanezer's sarcophagus, did Simon the Chashmonai really save the Jews of the Galilee? Possibly why the Ten Commandments are repeated in Deuteronomy, a different way of thinking. Yeah, so I'm your gal. There's just like so much studying for tests and so much going on. And of course, I'm writing a paper on that miserable topic of Pilegesh Bagiva, the story of the murder of the concubine at the very end of the book of Judges, although it probably doesn't happen time-wise at the end of the book. It's probably just set up like that for the messaging of the book. It's a class on the geography of Joshua and Judges, like trying to figure out if the stories that they talk about actually work in a geographical sense and then trying to prove it. So in that story, there's a lot of geography going on. There is where is Giv'ah, right, where the whole travesty happens. Yevus, Jerusalem, does it make sense passing Yevus and getting up to Giv'ah? Where's Yavesh Gilad? And how do they get involved in this? Like, why don't they come to decimate Binyamin? Are there connections with Benjamin? Of course, you could throw Bezek in there because of the later story of Shaul, who goes to save the people of Yavesh Gilad. He, of course, is a Benjaminite from Nachash, the Ammoni. Like, it's a totally fascinating story, totally miserable story. But, of course, it gets you thinking. It's very difficult. My professor in this class, who's really top-notch, is very, very much focused on ethnic boundaries, which even pertains to today. I mean, we're talking about a story that's over 3,000 years old, but like, where are you and where are you not, right? Like, I mean, one of the things we talked about in a different class that I have is like, and today, which is a whole lot easier to define, let's say, what a Jewish house is, because we've got the mezuzah on the door, right? There's distinctive. If you came into my house, you could probably figure out pretty quickly that I keep kosher, for example. You're not going to find a lobster cracker here. That's something that was discussed in another archaeology class that I was in, like the symbols. But when you're talking about the Iron Age or the biblical period, much, much harder, because a lot of the signs, the ethnic signs that we now use, just didn't exist then. And if they did, they're long gone because any organic material has mainly disappeared over the years. So from some rocks, and you don't have coins then, right? So from rocks and maybe from some metal, you have to try and figure ashes maybe. You have to try and like paint a picture. And it's not easy. Like how, you know, is there a commonality between the highland people, if you will, of the western part of the Jordan, meaning, let's say, Judea and Samaria and that area? So is it the same as, let's say, Yavesh Gilad, which is on the other side? Meaning, could it be that the same people, meaning could the people in Yavesh Gilad have been Israelites or, you know, monotheists? I'm specifically not saying Jews, because Judaism as we know it today is very, very different than what I'm talking about in that time period. So, and if they are the same, were they Israelites, right? So maybe they were the same, but they were worshiping somebody else. Finding idols or not finding idols, not necessarily where you can go, because as we know from the Nevi'im, from the prophets, the Jews were still worshiping idols. I mean, they say that's one of the reasons the first temple was destroyed, right? And of course, you know, not kosher bones, also not, it's a sign, but it's not definitive. Four room houses, very much associated with the Israelites, but also totally not clear. So there's just a lot. And basically, I think I can already tell you the end of my report, because this is like a 30-page report that I'm deep in the middle of. My bottom line, and maybe I could just hand that into the professor and save myself all the work, is maybe that's what it's going to be. It's going to be one big maybe. Try and put out the proofs for this and for that. Definitely the geography works in terms of the distances walked. Also, Yavesh Gilad, after Saul and Jonathan are killed in Beit Shan by the Philistines. I hope everybody knows what I'm talking about. This isn't like a spoiler alert. They take their bodies off the wall and either bury their bones or burn their bones, depending on if you go with Samuel or with Chronicles. There's a disparity there. So anyhow, it's just like totally fascinating reading archaeological reports. Tel Abu Karaz looking like a very good contender for Yavesh Gilad. I know some of you were worried about that until you turned on this podcast. So it's all very cool. But where it got me, and this combined with what I was doing yesterday, actually, and what I was reading a couple weeks ago in the Hebrew paper Makor Rishon, is hate. Yes, this podcast is going to be about hate. Now, we're not supposed to really talk about hate. It seems like it's if you're a hateful person, if you're somebody who hates, that's like it's a bad thing. But I and you don't want to be that. I mean, you want to be this loving person who doesn't hate. So I'm just going to say it flat out. There are people I hate. I'm not just talking about like terrorists and like really evil people and Hitler type of people. But there are people in my world whom I hate, like really hate. Like if they died, I would be fine. And if they died a painful death, I would not be upset. Okay. And does that make me a bad person? Maybe in your view, that makes me a bad person and I should push that away and brotherly love. But the fact is that I read a fascinating article by Rabbi Avraham Stav in Makor Rishon a couple of weeks ago. I think it was probably during the 9-day period where we're talking about Sinat Chinam, right? Like baseless hatred. And that's why the temple, second temple anyhow, was destroyed. And that's a very bad thing. And what he says is that the issue with that, with the baseless hatred, is actually not the hatred. It's the baseless. The Bible talks about hate a lot. As a matter of fact, it talks about hate more than it talks about love. And this, of course, gets me back to like Pilegish Begiva. I mean, you have the, you know, 11 tribes of Israel, like almost destroying one of the tribes. So something really not good is going on there. And the fact that it's in the biblical record shows that there's a message here. The message could be obviously this is a bad thing and don't do it. That would seem to be clear. But the fact is that it was there. There was a lot of hatred. It was hatred and jealousy of Benjamin, the youngest brother, maybe because he was the only one born in the land, maybe. Was it because of actions that they were taking? So again, getting back to ethnic boundaries, like what made you an Israelite in those days? I'll get back to hate in a second. What made you an Israelite in those days? Was it the fact that you belonged to a tribe, which belonged to a greater family, the children of the sons of, right, Bnei Israel, the sons of Israel, the sons of Jacob? Was it certain behaviors that you had? And you could totally roll this into today. Like, so who is a Jew? Is a Jew somebody who's born from a Jewish mother? Or I'm speaking from an Orthodox perspective. Is it somebody who converted to Judaism? Is it somebody who keeps certain holidays but doesn't necessarily have the other criteria? Like, so is it behavior? Is it belonging? How is that belonging identified? It's so fabulous. That's why I so much love the Tanakh, because it just brings up issues that have never really gone away. I mean, you can put them in a modern context, but the basic bottom line, the why, which I'm always asking, is still going to be there. I don't have the answers, but I'm so fascinated by the question and how it keeps coming up. So Avraham Stav, to get back to the article, so he writes about hatred and about how the Torah really talks about hate more than it talks about love. And he said the problem is the baseless part, that if you're hating for a bad reason, a wrong reason, or, you know, there's no justification for that, then that's what the problem is. But that hate can sometimes be very much the flip side of love, right? He quotes a story of Rav Menachem Froman, who passed away. Very, very interesting rabbi who lived in Tekoa. A lot of people were upset with him because, like, he met with Arafat, and he really felt that it was religious people who could bridge a lot of the misunderstandings and wars and crises that we have, especially in the Middle East, but not only, because connected by, you know, belief in God. Some people found him naive. I could probably be counted in there, but very glad that someone like him existed and that that perspective was out there. I thought that was super important. Anyway, apparently he once asked one of his sons-in-law if he ever hated his wife, meaning Rav Froman's daughter. And his son-in-law was like pretty aghast at the question, said, no, I mean, absolutely not. And Rav Froman said, that's too bad then, because you probably then don't love her as much as you should either. Something along those lines, I'm paraphrasing. Which is very interesting. Like, you know, I mean, some of the greatest anger and disappointment and at times hatred that we have, of course, is against people that we love, because we're disappointed, we're betrayed, whatever it is. It's like that pendulum, the pendulum swing. So I was reading this article and I thought it was fascinating because, you know, there's like certain things that are almost taboos to talk about. Like, you're embarrassed to say, you know, I hate people. You want to be this loving, as I said at the beginning, kind person. But it's there. And I think it's interesting and important to find out why, if it is baseless or if it is not baseless. I can tell you now, after lots of thinking about it, that the people that I hate is so not baseless. I wish it was baseless, but I have every reason and justification to hate these people. And so we'll move on from there. But it came back to me again yesterday. I spent yesterday filming two videos, two of the next videos for When Israel Fund. Some of you may be aware, I've been putting out a virtual video about once a month for about the last year and a half or so, going into communities, different community in Judea and Samaria, and talking to people living there, really trying to keep everybody connected to what's going on here and show the not famous people and what people are doing and really, at least in my opinion, how amazing the people here are. And everybody has a story and a struggle and a challenge. But you can't really understand Israel without understanding the people that make up Israel. So, but what I decided to do yesterday to come out around the first of Elul, the Jewish month of Elul, we're trying to put them out on the Rosh Chodesh, on the new months, and Tishrei, of course, which is also Rosh Hashanah this year, the beginning of the new year, went out of Judea and Samaria and went to one of the communities of the people who were thrown out of Gush Katif and went to one of the communities right next to Gaza. Because When Israel Fund also is still involved with them, even though they're not physically, getting back into boundaries, so they're not physically in Judea and Samaria, but most definitely consider the people who used to live in Gaza to still be part of that enterprise. And of course, the people around Gaza now been helping out a lot because they need it. I spent the morning with Anita Tucker, who many of you may know, in the rebuilt Netzer Chazani. It's off road number 3, which I also consider, as I was driving down there, like basically refugee row. The communities from Gush Etzion, where I live, the communities that were destroyed as part of Israel's War of Independence in 1948. So whoever was left, which was mainly widows and children, because most of the men were killed, rebuilt along that road, and some of the Gush Katif communities also rebuilt around that road. And I was thinking as I was driving down there, on the positive sense, you know, in 1948, when the communities where I live were devastated, and people really thought that was it. But then 19 years later, in the Six-Day War, we were able to liberate Judea and Samaria and come back and resettle these communities. So there's that. And you just never know. You really just never know. Like, the thing with Gaza looks like it's just never going to happen. And the Jews are never going to be able to go back there. And the Arabs living there are never going to be able to have a normal life, most of them, because of their own leadership. And it's just one big, big, big mess. But you don't know. I mean, you don't know. Beherifying, right in the blink of an eye, and nobody expected 67. So with all that, you have to deal with reality and act out of what we see and what we know and work as hard as we can to make things better. There's also a bigger picture that only Hashem knows. And, you know, when the time is right, Things can be fixed literally in the blink of an eye. Meantime, as I was talking to her there and we were going around the community, speaking to people, it was also brought some games that were, one is a fund did a 1+1 fundraising with Akubia, which is importer of some of the most popular games in Israel. And my son works for them. So that was a nice connection. Anyhow, so we distributed all through the day. We were distributing games to the youth centers there. And going around, and it's an amazing, you should really watch the video when it comes out. It's just an amazing community, and they so much want to be givers and not receivers. It's part of what's been so difficult for them is to have to be on the receiving end for the last 16 years when they were such givers. It was amazing how many soup kitchens found themselves after the expulsion without coleslaw and without salads and without vegetables for stir fry because they had been given so much by the farmers in Gush Katif who just felt that it was the right thing to do, that all of a sudden, and that was like a sidebar, like, where is all this stuff? And it was gone as well. All the, you know, the humanitarian and liberals who really wanted them to be out of their homes, I guess, didn't really care about the ramifications of that. So yeah, are you hearing the anger here? Are you hearing some of the hatred? Yeah, because I found myself yesterday incredibly upset once again over what happened 16 years ago. Never really goes away from me. It's always like in the back of my head. And yeah, hating the people who allowed that to happen, some of whom are still sitting in Israel's government, who allowed that to happen and who, and I think this is why for many of us it remains such an open wound, who have not asked for forgiveness. Like, do you need more proof that maybe it was a mistake? But they haven't. Well, at least I haven't heard of maybe one or two. I haven't heard of really anybody saying like this was a mistake and the grief that was caused to you was wrong and the whole country is now suffering. While we were filming, we were interrupted many, many times, had to turn off the camera, by the sound of the Air Force, because there's a base not far from there and they're practicing and a lot of what they're doing is having to protect Israel from the rockets and from the fires, the balloons that then cause fires all around Gaza. And very cool, actually, though, to see a fighter jet go up into the sky at, I'm not exaggerating, a 90 degree angle. I mean, I was nauseous just watching it. I can't imagine how the pilot managed to do that. So, you know, it's really, it's awesome in that sense, in that display. It's very humbling, you know, to realize that there are people doing this and risking their lives all the time to do this, which is not something that we think about. It came out a couple weeks ago that the Iron Dome almost took down one of the Israeli jets. Very small space that everybody was jostling around in, airspace, and tragedy, you know, just barely averted at the last second. So there's totally an element of danger in there. And it's like, why? I mean, why are they shooting? Why are they doing this? So, so just a lot of those thoughts and anger and frustration and grief were there yesterday. You know, they've rebuilt their lives, but they yearn for home. They still yearn for home. In the meantime, they've opened up a gemach, like a lending, I guess a charitable lending. What are they? No, they called it, it's a social initiative, okay, of recycling. That is the new term for having wedding gowns and all kinds of beautiful other gowns for, you know, for special occasions that people wear once and then give to them and then they can lend them out. And they get people from all over the country who come there and really beautiful things. So that, you know, they're happy that they're able to now be the people who can support others after so many years of having to be helped by the rest of us. So there was that. And then from there, continued down the road to Netiv Asara, which is a community that was relocated from Sinai in 1982. They used to be there. And as per the Camp David Accords, the peace treaty with Egypt, they had to move out of Sinai and they went up there. Excuse me. And so they are the Silicon Valley of seeds. In their hothouses are enormous watermelon and cucumbers and cherry tomatoes. I mean, they develop and export seeds, boutique seeds. Like if you're living in Holland and you like it, then very red and very sweet. I'm just saying. Then Netiv Asara will We'll make a tomato just for your palate. And they do that all around the world. They have customers from everywhere. They're super proud of what they do, taking agriculture up to an entire other level. And they are, oh, maybe like 20 meters from Gaza. They are just across the wall on the northern side. There was an article in last week's Makori Sean about the villas and the palaces and the beautiful water parks in Gaza. And some of them are on the remains of the Jewish communities. They are one of them that the road still exists. It's just cut in half by this enormous wall from Netiva Asara down to the northern communities of Gaza, Dugit, Al-Sinai, Nisanit, just on the other side of the wall. And there, of course, are some villas of people in Gaza. CNN never seems to get around to showing that side of Gaza. I'm sure it's not the majority, but then again, villas and fancy pools are not the majority of America either. Okay, but it's there. There's a lot of money in there. Only part of the story gets told. Anyway, spent the afternoon there. Very different community than the Gush Katif people. We didn't talk politics, but I would imagine that they put themselves more on the left side of the political map. Incredible people, hardworking. Interviewed Smadi, who is the emergency coordinator there for COVID and for wars and mortars and God knows what. So basically, like, her routine day is what we would all consider a major crisis. And she was there with her granddaughter. Her three kids and all 10 grandchildren live there. And I, like, flat out said to the granddaughter, why? Like, what do you need this for? And she said, well, this is my home and every place has its dangers. Sweet girl. She said, every place has its dangers, but this is my home. This is my roots. And I'm not going to let the enemy drive us out of here. Like, there's really, there's nothing to respond to that except, wow, somebody taught them incredible values on so many levels. But the most poignant part of the day was during the last, in May, with the last round of violence with Gaza, an army jeep was hit on the road in Netiva Asara. And soldiers were very badly hurt. And an emergency medical kit that Mark Provisor of One Israel Fund had just brought to them a couple of weeks before was used. The ambulance couldn't get there because they were being just rained on by mortars and by rockets, intentionally, of course. And so the head of security grabbed the kit, and he was able to go out there under total rocket fire. I don't know how he did it. I asked him. He said he doesn't know either. He just focused. He was with a paramedic, and they were able to save one soldier who would have died otherwise and get him into their jeep and then get him out to the ambulance and save him. And thank God, out of the three soldiers that were in that jeep were returned to their families. But one of them was not. He was killed. And so we were standing there. The scorch marks are on the road. You could see the pieces of metal because the entire jeep burned. And they got everybody out, but the jeep then burned. And there's I didn't know the tires had metal wires in them. So there's just like a coil of metal there that was tires and then pieces of metal that was the jeep. I wouldn't stand on it. For me, obviously, it was like a holy place. I mean, someone had died there. But talking to you could see that for all his experience, still traumatized by the experience, and talking to him about what had happened there. And you could see Gaza, it's right there. And on a personal level, one of my daughters was a Tatzpitanit. She was, one of the girls who look at the screens. I've talked about this before, through the balloons that overlook Gaza, and the cameras are in them, and then they're able to see what's going on and see if there's an infiltration and immediately, move that information forward, because you have seconds to act in this area, seconds before all hell can break loose. So that was Atlas. That was where one of my daughters was based. And she also still has her trauma from that time there. And the sound guy that we were with, someone new, I was working with a new team, and he lives in Tel Aviv, and he was talking to me about how he also was served in the army there. He was a sniper, and he has his memories, many of them not easy, from in that area. And then when we're packing up to go, and he tells me that you know, he and his wife want to move there and that's where they want to raise their kids. And I'm like, didn't you just tell me that this area, you know, it was difficult for you? And he said, yeah, but it's a beautiful area. It's an important area. There's an amazing community here. And what you hear over and over and over again from people in that area is 95% of the time it's heaven and 5% it's hell. And we tend to, you know, just hear about the difficult times. But on a day-to-day level, they have very, very strong communities and very strong family life. And many of them are working the land, which gives a tremendous satisfaction, even though it's very, very difficult. And Israel is now, with the new government, is coming up with some new plans for the farmers. And some of them are upset and some of them are happy. So it's kind of like rearranging. Are we subsidizing water? Are we not? Israel might let in imports so that there'll be, for the consumers, there'll be lower prices. On the other hand, what happens to our farmers? It's a question that everybody has in every country, right? Do you want to, but maybe people should be given choices. Like now signs will go up. You see this in Europe. You don't see it in Israel yet. That if you come to a stand of pears, it'll tell you where the pears were grown. And then you can decide if you want to buy pears from that place. So like I personally would pay extra to buy things that are raised by Israeli farmers, but not everybody has that choice or even luxury financially to be able to do that. And I understand that too, and people should be given the choices. On the other hand, I do want to see Israeli agriculture. I think it's hugely important for many, many reasons, some of them even religious, that, you know, the blessings that you make on the food that's grown in the land, the mitzvot, the commandments that you can keep, that you're privileged to keep, like we're coming up to Shemitah, we're coming up to the sabbatical year. And yeah, it's difficult and it's challenging, but oh, what a privilege to be able to have these biblical laws that we can once again keep. And of course, tithing and all of that. So, I mean, it's easy for me to say that it's a privilege. For the farmers, it's actually a very difficult year and something that needs to be supported. But we'll be talking about Shemitah. I imagine we'll do a show on Shemitah as it gets closer. I've just been thinking about it because part of what I'm doing also in raising money for the communities is I'm trying to get money for gardening in now because they've got like one more month to put in plants and everything into the ground before Rosh Hashanah, and then you can't plant for the next year. So, you know, like trying to get things done now in the next few weeks that we have so that they take advantage and have, you know, the beauty of the, it's not clear about the fruit trees yet. I was discussing that with someone yesterday, difference of opinions. If you already can't plant the fruit trees since Tu B'Av, or if Rosh Hashanah or just a couple of days before is the cutoff. And that happens to be important because you can't eat the fruit of the fruit trees until the fourth year. And if you plant it even just in the next couple of weeks, though, then this year already counts as the first year. So in terms of like marketing your fruit or being able to eat your fruit, the next few weeks are very important. And there's differences of opinions about when that starts. Anyhow, so there's a lot of stuff going on here that if you're not living in the land, you're missing. You're just missing because you're seeing things that are just connected with the land. And obviously the stuff that makes the headlines is not usually those things that are challenging and privileged, you know, very, very much a privilege, but also have to be sorted out. And so, you know, you see that some of it in the news with the new reforms, which I'm totally behind, of the religious minister, you know, to try and change the whole kashrut, the whole kosher certification on different restaurants and how that's going to happen. So a lot of interesting things happening here. I'm glad that I don't have to make those decisions because it's just impossible. And so much criticism of the new government. It's like they can't get a break. As I have said, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I see things that are also bothering me. But I also know how difficult it must be to balance this coalition that's just looks like you could absolutely never figure this out. Everybody talks about compromise and getting back to that like brotherly love and everybody living in the same tent. But the bottom line is that that means that you have to compromise and that means that you can't do everything you want to do. And it's easy for us who are not involved in the decision-making process to be incredibly critical. But as somebody who just on a, you know, micro, like sitting in my local council for 10 years, I could tell you how difficult it is and how disheartening it is also just to hear the criticism, which rarely do you hear the praise, even when you have spent a long time thinking about what you're doing and what the best way forward is. What you tend to hear as a public official is really just the criticism. and people not understanding what goes into it. And as much as I myself have been very critical of politicians and, of course, despise the corruption, that's for sure, in the political world, there are very many good people who are involved in politics on all different levels. And the hours that go into the discussions and the decisions are just endless. And of course, take you away from your family and from other things that you're doing. And in most cases, definitely mine, you know, there's no compensation. I mean, you do it because you want to make things better. And it's just, keep this in mind, people, is what I'm saying, is when you throw out the criticisms of wherever you live and your official, also try and, like, when you can, throw out a compliment too, because it's a difficult situation to be in. And like with the Israeli government and all the massive challenges arrayed in front of it, from COVID to Iran, to dealing with, you know, administrations that are not necessarily jumping up and down with joy that Israel exists, and all the other, you know, the list. So it's, you know, it's not simple. And every once in a while, though, we do have to give hakarat tov, like to say thank you. I think we should, at least for the efforts. You may not like the results, but, you know, you should. You should definitely commend the efforts. And here I'm totally throwing in something from, you know, being a mother, where my kids will get mad at me and not like what I did, or what I said, or what I, whatever. But I think they realize at this point that it's coming from a good place and that I should get an A, even an A+, for efforts. So speaking of grades, I'm going to end this now because I do have to go and get some work done in the thick of things. One more final, 4 papers and plodding along. And so that's my own personal challenge. Anyway, everybody, I hope none of you out there are people filled with baseless hatred. But if you do dislike somebody, just to roll this back and finish this up, and it's justified, then at least from what I'm feeling like, don't feel guilty about it. Okay, we're human beings. And there are people out there who've done us like great harm, either personally or to other people whom we care about very much. And it's important to also say that, you know, that those feelings are okay also. All of us try hard to be positive and good people, but sometimes it's justified. And I was just still carrying that over from yesterday and, you know, thinking about what happened with Gaza and what happened with Gush Katif. Just kind of, like I said, it's never a closed wound, but it really reopened. And there is reason there. I mean, I didn't hear any hate or any anger from them yesterday, which to me is just astonishing. I was the one who was carrying it, which maybe I'll work on once I finish my papers. Anyway, everybody, I hope you have a really great week. Stay away from anybody who's sick, Delta variants and otherwise. And just in general, we should all try and be a little bit kinder, a little bit more patient, and have faith. And have faith, because the bottom line is that's what carries at least me through. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Thanks to Ben and to Tabitha for pushing this out with me every week. And take care, everybody. Goodbye for now.
Shalom, everybody. This is Jeremy Gimpel from the Land of Israel Network, but also from the Land of Israel Fellowship. We have members from 31 countries joining us every week, Sunday, live at 6 p.m. For those that can't make it live, they get a direct recording. Just go to thelandofisrael.com/fellowship. We're growing together. We're learning together. We're celebrating together. The gates are open for all who want to come and join us.